8:25, got behind this morning, but that's good. Still got plenty of time. Congressman Mike Boss joining me on the phone this morning. Hey, Mike, how are you, buddy?
Great, Tom. Just out here trying to figure out what we're going to do on the omnibus bill as well as the stimulus bill.
It's two items here that have been the sticking point over and over again, the liability issue and state and local funding. First off, the liability. State and local funding. Now, specifically, would this be cure to part two? Is how that would work?
It would be part three.
Part three.
And it's still referred to as the fourth stimulus fourth COVID package. But as far as stimulus, it was three, and it is the two arguments. Okay, basically, and I think people would understand the argument. The question is where is the balance point that we get agreement between the sides? Many of us believe that we want to help state and local governments, but we want to help them with the actual issues that they dealt with COVID. We don't need to put money in there to bail out state pension systems and states that have been very, very poor in handling their affairs prior to COVID. Illinois, for instance, California. Those that had put themselves in bad shape by bad government. Now, we want to take care of COVID. Now, that's the argument there. However, the ones that want that in there, the only way that they, and the thing they don't want is we want a package that says no class action lawsuit can occur against a business, a government, or whether it's a school board or a local government, if they bring people back to work and a COVID outbreak occurs at their location, as long as they're doing what they should do. There are already many trial lawyers that want to go sue a company by bringing people back to work, and all of a sudden they get an outbreak of COVID, and then they want to blame the company because they came back to work. So this is the liability that we're talking about. So these two are the arguments that are going on. We think that we've found a place. Problem Solvers has found a place. The package itself is about $936 billion. If those two items do not get in, it ends up being about a $700 billion expenditure. But the state and local part ends up adding that much to it.
Right. All right. So those are two stumbling points. So Mitch McConnell's been saying, let's just not address these points. We won't leave there, and let's get right. The rest of the package out the door. Is that what's happening right now in the meetings? Do you know?
That's an argument, but yet there's still others who are saying, wait, let's not move too quick. Maybe we want to talk about this because they do. You know, there has been negative impact to some states or to states and local governments. It's kind of wild because they're arguing that one is one the Republican's position and one's the Democrat position. It's really not. It's a blend of who thinks that we should give for state and local and who thinks we should not have the tort language in there. So that's why I think, you know, though Mitch is saying, well, we'll just move it forward. Those that are probably on the side of not giving to any of the states and local governments are more than willing to push that forward the way it is. Everybody's in agreement with the part that Mitch wants to move.
All right. So will this get done today, Mike? Will you vote on it tomorrow?
It's possible we will have a vote later today. We could have a vote tomorrow. But with this place around here, you can never judge anything on who might throw a wrench into the gears as things are starting to move forward.
Mike, when you signed on to that amicus brief with Texas last week, along with La Hood, I believe it was, I'm assuming you got a blaze of mail, and it was I did on specifically you, and they were either really, really for it, saying, I voted for you many times, and you've reinstilled my faith in you, to considerably less honorable statements about you.
Well, and actually, I believe the people that didn't agree with me probably never supported me or the president in the first place. That being said, let me tell you, let's look at this logically and not look at the people that hate Donald Trump or the people that think Donald Trump hung the moon. Look, he has the right to do everything in his legal power to ensure that every legal vote counted. He has that right. You know, there's people all across this nation that are very, very concerned about these voting machines and the things that are showing up in them, with the experts that are talking about the barcodes and the danger of the way these machines have worked, where these machines came from. And so whether you support Donald Trump or you don't support Donald Trump, we have to make sure that people can believe in an election when it happens and when it has taken place. Otherwise, we lose what we are as a nation. It's vitally important that any and all irregularities are fully investigated so that we know for future elections that this, if there was this type of fraud, and if somebody says, oh, we don't have frauds in elections, they're obviously not paid attention to Illinois over the many, many, many years, whether it is Chicago or East St. Louis. Now, we're going to finally have a president. We're going to see what's going to happen. But when I signed on with the brief to support the Texas State's Attorney case, that is well within my right as a member of Congress, and it was not asking to overturn the election. What it is asking for is a true opportunity for the courts to see and hear the evidence. I think by the Supreme Court walking away from it, there was a problem with that. But it is vitally important that the American people can trust in their elections. And, you know, to have people tell me, oh, that was wrong to sign on to that. No, it wasn't. No, it was asking the courts to look into this so that the American people can feel secure about the election results. It's one of the most important things we do.
It was interesting because it's redundant at this point because one of the people who wrote me a letter here, Jim, says, ask Mike Boss, did he make a mistake? I think you cleared that up.
No, I did not make a mistake.
Right.
No.
All right. Now, here's another issue. And I'm a little vague on this. I've always been kind of fascinated about committees and how they work. So you are the head Republican now, lead Republican on the House Veterans Affairs Committee. Is that correct?
Right. So, yeah, I am the what's known as the ranking member, okay, which is if we were in the majority, I would be the chairman, okay? And if we get the majority in 2 years, I will be the chairman of the VA committee for the United States.
I was curious.
What an honor, because it's done. We have what's known as a steering committee. There's about 32 members that either represent members of leadership and or leaderships themselves, and also there's several regions around the United States, and they have one member in there to vote to put people on committees, to get people chairmanship, ranking member. And I had to do a presentation before those 30-plus people on what my ideas and plans were for the future, top priorities for the VA committee. And after giving my presentation, it was between me and General Jack Burtman out of Michigan, who is a good friend, a Marine general. And I actually received the votes, and I was almost unanimous that I would become the ranking member.
You know, I got to tell you, there were a bunch of items on your priority list that, I'll be honest with you, was aware of them. And kind of how they got pushed in the back seat. Can I give you an example? Burn pits in Iraq, toxic exposure, things along that line, which, you know, well aware most anybody is, especially if you had a family member who was there. But somehow this thing had gotten forgotten, but here it is, one of your top priorities.
Right. What toxic exposure, and we're moving down the path right now, because remember, if you're familiar with what Blue Water Navy was, Blue Water Navy was basically the people who had been exposed to Agent Orange out on the ships in the South China Sea because the water system on the ship picked it up off the surface of the ocean when processing the drinking water. And also they were exposed out there, but they had always been ignored that they were having the same symptoms as those that had Agent Orange, so they didn't put the presumption in there. Matter of fact, 2/3 of them had died off by the time we got that passed 2 years ago. And so the argument on toxic exposure due to burn pits and other exposures in Iraq and Afghanistan We don't want to let two-thirds of these veterans die off before they receive the benefits they need through the health side of the VA. So we need to make sure we can deal with that. Tom, we also have veteran suicide. We got 20 veterans a day committing suicide, and only about and 14 of those veterans have never even seen the inside of a VA or talked to a counselor about their issues, and or even know sometimes whether it's available for them. You got that? And then you got another issue out there is we've got to modernize our VAs so that they handle women's unique health issues. The fastest growing group of veterans are women veterans, and because of just changing in the military about the amount of women that are in the military. So these are the type of things we've got to be working on.
You know, it was interesting. I was at a local watering hole, we'll call it, not very far away from the Marion VA, and a guy comes in, sits next to me, and I strike up a conversation with him. Where y'all from? He's from Indianapolis. He has driven from Indianapolis, Indiana, to bring his friend to the Marion VA and was sitting there until all of his work was done at the hospital so he could drive him back home again. And I didn't realize how large an area the Marion VA tax in. Right. The reason why I was thinking about that is because they haven't seen, you talked about how they haven't seen the inside of a VA, is because this one VA covers huge right. areas, and they're not the only one.
It really does. And there's visions, what they call them, all over, and they are interwoven. But now, it used to be called the Choice Act, now it's the Mission Act. The Mission Act has been in place. Basically, it does allow for a majority of treatments to occur in the private sector if you're more than 50 miles away from a VA or you would have to wait more than 30 days on an appointment at the VA. So, you know, we're doing that to try to provide for everybody. Because you got to realize that you just described what's going on right here in the central part of the United States. You go out to the western states, Wyoming and stuff like that, try to get to a VA from out there. It is tough. I mean, and so we've got to modernize our VA. Understand that when we deal with the VA, it's the largest bureaucracy in the world. Okay, it's got 398,000 employees. We're all over the world with them. But and you remember the VA? It's not just the VA hospitals. You've got VA the benefits side for the GI Bill. You've got the appeals process and everything like that. You've got the all the other things that the Veterans Administration has to deal with, and it's just a huge bureaucracy.
And we spend so much time apparatchik is the Russian term for it. We spend all the time doing the bureaucracy and not the healthcare.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I think that's the point you're trying to make.
And or we get locked in healthcare. One thing we're trying to do, and I'm kind of carrying on from Dr. Phil Rowe, who was the chairman and then ranking member who just retired. That's who I took the place of. You know, one thing we have to do is we're doing a inventory, basically, of all of our buildings. Are they properly set to do modern medicine? Are we trapped back in when they were built in the 20s or 40s or whenever? And are they up to date? Are we using them as wise as we possibly can? So we're doing a complete overview of that to make sure that we can deliver the best health care to our veterans in the most modern and up-to-date way so that they can receive the benefits, receive their health care and everything like that. An interesting thing that happened the other day is, you know, when they rolled out, well, 2 days ago, when they rolled out, and I got a checklist of which VA hospitals are getting the vaccine. The first person to get the vaccine was in Minnesota. That was the first veteran. Okay, let me clarify.
Yeah.
The first veteran was in Minnesota, and she is a 96-year-old World War II veteran. And she was the first one to receive the vaccine through the VA, and that was in Minnesota. And so the rollout is, you know, there's 70 million doses. You know, it's amazing how many
Well, I figured it out, Mike, at $1.2 billion with the number that I worked out. I think I came up to, I'm remembering my math now, $1.2 billion I think comes out to $4 a shot. Or inoculation, if we will. And what was interesting, I thought, was $1.2 billion to pay for it, $35 billion to transport it, which I thought was odd. Hey, Mike, I want to go back to the election again because I'm getting a lot of it. I want to give you a sampling here this morning of the messaging that is coming into me while you and I speak this morning, in particular about the election. Here's one. It's not a question. It's a statement. I'm never voting again until Dominion is gone. Here's another statement. It says, Illinois is really a red state. When fraud is so in our face and nothing done, no laws anymore. Sidney Powell has thousands of points of evidence. Joe Biden is not the president. Kamala waiting in the wing. Bogus third world image. Bravo to Mike for having, I'll have to clean this up, the testicular fortitude to fully represent all of his constituents. Excellent interview as always. And that's just a sample of some of the stuff that I've got coming in. We're talking about the election. People are not going to let this go, Mike.
No, I know. And the you know, we are always known for our smooth transition of power. But the smooth transition of power is frustrating, as you can tell from your listeners and what I hear through my office, of I want to be able to trust the election. Now, let me tell you that this isn't anything new. Remember that when John F. Kennedy was elected, magic numbers came out of Chicago in the middle of the night, exactly what they needed to make him president. Dick Nixon, after talking to some more senior members of government, said, this needs to be a peaceful transition, and it did, okay? But there was questions of that election. We all know about the hanging Chad and where there was questions with that election. So, you know, we've had Republicans and we've had Democrats that felt that maybe the something went wrong with the election. What we have that's so different about this one, Tom, is it is multiple states, and it is a voting system that if you're not a computer person and an analyst of a computer, it's very difficult to trust it because of what you've heard, not only through social media, but media in general, and then at a time when you don't normally trust media.
You know what's interesting? You talked about the Kennedy election. The story goes, Mike, that Joe Kennedy or Joe Kennedy's representative met the union representatives out of Chicago at a pizza joint in Heron to arrange to make sure that those votes were delivered to the Kennedy family in the Kennedy election in a pizza location in Heron, Illinois.
Yeah, I'll be darned. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's one of the legends, as it goes anyway. Mike Boss, Congressman, this morning. Mike, final thoughts before I let you go this morning. Get back to, of course, the stimulus negotiations and learning more about that.
Yeah, we will be – something is going to come out of here this week, I believe. We're not leaving here until we get something. We've got that and the omnibus bill. Now, the question is, will the two of them be put together? And then we'll recess for the Christmas holiday. We'll come back here in January. Our Constitution says we will take office on the 3rd. This is actually and the Constitution says we will be sworn in for House. Now, the president will be sworn in on the 20th, but the 3rd is constitutional, and it falls on a Sunday. So we're going to be sworn in on Sunday this year. Right. And then we'll go back to the work of the people, and we've got a whole list of things that we can get done. Regardless of how the presidential election turns out, we have to continue to do the work of people.